to continue our study of 2 Samuel, and we'll be in lesson 11 this evening. Okay, so last week we talked about David lamenting over Saul and Jonathan, over their death, and that was in chapter 1. And what did we find that was unusual about chapter 1 and about this Amalekite? You know, he was looking for an award or a knightship or something like that, it seems like. I'm going to turn this around so that I don't have to. Anyway, it looked like he was looking for a knightship or, you know, something really neat was going to happen to him because he had, he took credit for slaying Saul. And it was an Amalekite, and we all know the story of Saul and the Amalekites. What do you think that David's response should have been to that?
People let him know because he'd be open and let him know how life and all the way are together. But David had to respect him for the fact that God made Saul king and he wasn't going to reward someone who killed him. David could have killed him at any time.
You know, David is an oddity. I've been reflecting on that over the last couple of weeks. David doesn't do quite often what maybe you and I would do, and it seems like that he has put off a lot of opportunities to do things, but his controlling thought process is what?
God made Saul king.
Yes. And God made Saul king, and now God made me king, but I'm going to let this play out. And, you know, David seems to have the attitude, well, you know, I'm going to let God take care of this, and I'm going to, you know, I'm going to follow along with this. You know, we read about David being one that was after God's own heart. Quite honestly, I don't understand it, but, you know, it really plays out in a lot of these things that we see, that David is really someone that respects everything that that God has told him, including putting Saul on the throne and letting him stay. Bill,
go back into 1 Samuel, where after David had a chance to kill Saul several times, Saul said, "I can see now that you will be the king of Judah, and just make sure that you don't wipe out my heritage, all my people." And I think that went him forward, just as he knew that until Saul was dead, he was king. And for this man to come and say, "I killed him," was really an insult to David and the way he felt about God and Saul.
Yeah, it just had never worked out for any of these people that thought that they were going to take advantage or do things beyond what God had said. You know, Saul's God's chosen king here, and you know he's on the outs right now. But it just didn't work out for this Amalekite the way that he thought. Okay, so here's the quiz of the day: name the kings of the Jewish people. Okay, well, is that right or not? So the people, the Israelites, came to Samuel and said, "Okay, we got to have us a king. We need to to put one in because the king's going to do all of this and that. King was picked, and that was Saul. And so who's the next one going to be? So we never have, you know, nobody ever thinks about this. It's Bashius, or however you pronounce his name. If you're going to list the kings of Israel, he doesn't make the cut, does he? And wonder why that is. He wasn't chosen by God. That's exactly right. So when we get over here in 2 Samuel 2, we're looking at, you know, we're looking up until chapter 15 with David talking about the Amalekite that said that he slew Saul. When we get down to chapter 17, we have this David's lament for Saul and Jonathan, and he goes through and describes, and this is truly a heart-wrenching situation for David, because here the Lord's anointed has been killed, and also Jonathan has been killed. And so we see there in this book of Jasher. Y'all have any idea what that means? Or is it in the Bible? Have y'all found it? Yeah, my reference here, or my footnote, says the book of the upright. So, you know, it's obviously it's not part of the canonized scripture that we have, but apparently they would, you know, when this was written, whoever would have known what that was. And so David has this, you know, has this song that's been created. And I thought about this too this week. I believe that David would have been happy all of his life if he had just been a sheep herder, and he could have gotten out and sang his songs and taken care of his sheep and done all of these things. I mean, you see the writings that he had. You see the closeness that he has to God. You see the things that were going on in his life before and after. And but for the fact that, you know, we know of him as being the premier king of Israel, it would have, you know, I wouldn't have been surprised if he'd have just been tickled to death to have been a sheep herder up there on the side of the mountain taking care of Jesse's goats and sheep and whatever it was. It seemed to me like he was in, you know, he was comfortable with himself no matter what he was doing. Laurie.
He was also the youngest. So
yeah.
There probably wasn't much expected.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Isn't that terrible? So David has taken on a responsibility here that he probably certainly didn't seek for, because he was out there tending the sheep when Samuel comes to do this. But it just came to me, you know, thinking about this, all of a sudden there's something wrong. He's close to God. He's close to Saul. He's close to Jonathan. He writes this song and has it recorded so that, you know, so that it would be a continual thing for Israel to look at. Okay, so we get to chapter 2 here, and we're talking about him going to Hebron. And so David inquires of the Lord, "Shall I go up to any of the cities of Judah?" And the Lord said, "Go up." David said, "To which shall I go?" And he said, "To Hebron." So David went up there with his two wives, Ahinoam and Abigail, the widow of Nabal of Carmel. And David brought up his men who were with him, every one of his household, and they lived in the towns of Hebron. And the men of Judah came, and there they anointed David king over the house of Judah. So everybody knew that David was the designated king. And here, when he gets to Hebron, he is now designated as the king. He sends messengers to Jabesh-Gilead and said to them, may you be blessed because you have showed this loyalty to Saul, your Lord. Did you notice that? To Saul, your Lord, and buried him. What is the story there? Yeah, they took him back to Beth Shean and hung him up on the sides of the wall. And apparently, these people from Jabesh Gilead had some of that loyalty that Saul had for, or that Samuel had for, or David had for Saul, because they felt like, well, he's the king. He's he's designated to do that. If you ever get to Beth Shean, you go up about 200 feet. It's on top of a tail. So this would not have been a less than formidable task for them to go do this. They had to climb up. It's at least, that mound is at least 200 feet high, and then the hill or the walls of the city would have been on top of there. So it's something that they took a lot of effort. It wasn't like they just were very easily restricted from doing that. Okay, so Ish-bosheth, who is that? He is the surviving son of Saul. And there in verse 8, we see something very important about this. Chapter 2, verse 8. But Abner, the son of Ner, commander of Saul's army, took Ish-bosheth, the son of Saul, and brought him over to Mahanaim. And there he made him king over Gilead and the Asherites and Jezreel and Ephraim and Benjamin and all Israel. Now, what is different here about the way that Ish-bosheth gets his kingdom and the others, and Saul and David got theirs? They were appointed by God. And Abner, just takes it on himself. Who is Abner? How do we know him? He's the head of Saul's army. And so he's trying to maintain this, maintain the position that he's got. All of a sudden, my guy Saul is gone, so I'm about to be out of a job, and David's not going to take prisoners, although sometimes he did, and put new people in there. And so he just picks this youngest son, and he thinks, just like a lot of the hierarchy goes now, where they just follow right down to the remaining relative. And he's made king. So Ish-bosheth, Saul's son, was 40 years old when he began to reign over Israel, and he reigned 2 years, but the house of Judah followed David. So we got Judah on the south, and we got Ish-bosheth with Israel and Benjamin and Ephraim on the north side. And then it says that David was king in Hebron over the house of Judah for seven years and 6 months. So we've got a divided kingdom here, and it's going to be a long time before we have another one. Well, not that long, but anyway, it's going to be a while before we have another divided kingdom. But they have brought this together, such that we've got two battling kings, and you can imagine the rivalry that comes from that. Okay, so Abner and Joab, who is Joab? He's the captain of David's group. So here we got here we've got Rommel and Patton is what it really amounts to. We got the two top guys that are up here, and they're facing each other at this pool at Gibeon. And so what do they do? So we got 12 from one side and 12 from the other side, and 12 from one side of the pool, 12 from the other side of the pool. Abner says to Joab, so this is a pretty cordial thing that's going on here. We're going to pick us two groups of I don't want to say tag team type deals, but that's kind of what we got here. We've got two groups of 12, and this is not unlike Goliath coming out and saying, you know, send me your guy out here, and, you know, whoever wins is going to take the other. And so what happened to what happened here? We'd call it a draw, wouldn't we? So there's 12 dead bodies on each side, and what happens after that?
Everything goes crazy.
That's about as good as I can describe it. Everything, yeah, everything goes crazy. We have the battle where it's a draw. It says that each of them, you know, stuck each other in the side and this and that. And then down in verse 17, we see that the battle was very fierce that day. Abner and the men of Israel were beaten before the servants of David. So that didn't work out well for Abner and Ishbosheth. So when Abner and his group starts to run away, then this Asahel, I don't know how to pronounce that, Asahel, I suppose you would say that, he goes after Abner, and who is he? Yeah, he's Joab's brother. And I've never seen this happen before, but he goes after him. It says that he's fast of foot, you know, and all this. He goes after Abner, and what does Abner do?
Go away, leave you alone.
Can you imagine this? You know, he's chasing Abner, and Abner just turns around and, like, says, well, little boy, you go do this, because if I kill you, I don't know how I'm going to talk to Captain Rommel of the other army over here. You know, I don't know how this is going to happen. And did Asahel take the bait? He did not. Abner says, turn aside from me. Why should I strike you to the ground? How could I then lift up my face to your brother Joab? I can't imagine that they were real tight, but in any case, he felt like that was going to be a problem. He continues to follow him. Abner struck him in the stomach with the butt of his spear. So that's not the part that's got the piercing part on there, and it came out his back. So he must have hit this guy pretty hard. It's would be my assumption there. He hit him pretty hard, and so he dies. Joab and Abishai pursued Abner. They are following him. It says there in verse 25, the people of Benjamin gathered themselves around Abner and became one group and took their stand on top of the hill. So what happens next? Yeah.
And was
able to rule there. And so they're, you know, they're going through this, but who's missing from this? David. Do you notice that? He's not in the middle of this. And, you know, David's going to do a couple of other things here that don't really make a whole lot of, they're not reasonable or would not be reasonable to us. As we pass, you know, as we pass along here. So we get down to verse 30. Joab returned from the pursuit of Abner. When he had gathered all the people together, there were missing from his servants 19 men besides Asahel. And the servants of David had struck down 360 of Abner's men. And so they took up Asahel and buried him in his tomb. And, when this happens, what happens at the end of that? Joab starts heading to, heading back. And then in verse 1 of chapter 3, which looks like it should be in chapter 2, There was a long war between the house of Saul and the house of David, and David grew stronger and stronger while the house of Saul became weaker and weaker. So we're seeing the transition is going on, Lord. That is correct.
Yeah. I mean, I know they're all supposed to be from the tribe of Judas. You would think they're related somehow. But I just kind of found that interesting that he basically has Joab, his nephew, his daughter, and he's got his. It sounds like it's his sister's son.
I think that's why Joab is able to get away with the things that he's able to do.
Right, yeah. I thought about that too.
So we have some family matters here that are probably outside our understanding.
Yeah.
It's a good thing, and that might explain Abner and why Abner was reluctant to kill these, because they were they were related to him. So David's got this big family, and then he creates another family here with all these people. See, this is not really what I think of when I think of David. I don't think of him having these six wives here. Abinoam, which was of Jezreel. Abigail, the widow of Nabal. Micah, the daughter of the king of. So whenever these people were defeated, they just joined the joined the group that came with him. And one of the footnotes down here in the book says that that's what happened when a king a king was conquered. Then his wives went with the conqueror, and apparently that is the case here. But David is creating a fairly good sized family here.
Well,
here.
David, the man had one wife. He wanted that man's wife, and he took the wife.
Yes.
There's a lot of things going on with that situation.
Yeah, and that goes back to my original comment. I don't think of David as being this character. I think of David as being and maybe that's just the image that we have of him, that he had a lot of things that we don't know about. There's a lot of things here that when you read in here, there's a lot of things that are going on in David's life. That's obvious. There's a myriad of things that are going on in his life. And when all these wars are going on, we don't hear from him, but he's got to be over directing and telling Joab to do this and to do that.
Well, Sam, we're in the middle of a civil war here, too. And God has basically told David that he's going to be king over all of his people. David understands that. So it's not as if Israel is the enemy, per se. These are his brothers, and these are people that he inevitably is going to rule over. Which in itself are the descendants of Abraham through Isaac. There's a lot of complexity to it, and I agree with that, but it is easy to understand in the very just broad sense of there's complexity in all of our lives. I mean, what you see on the surface,
I don't see how you fight a civil war in this group like this, but that's what really was going on, and that probably explains a whole lot more, is that David was not going to wipe out the all the Israelites, because these are the chosen people. You know, this is, you know, he can sit here and name, you know, these are my great-great-grandfathers and great-uncles and, you know, all of those things. Everybody that David is fighting against is related to him. Everybody.
And then, too, it's just, I mean, the tribe of Judah is going to accept him as king, and they're sticking by it. Well, it's not, you know, 11 other tribes that are fighting against him. They're on their land, and they're just going along with life. But Abner has, you know, talked two or three of them in and said, hey, you know, we don't have to accept David, and, you know,
so we got a mini version of what was going on when Solomon died. It's what it really amounts to. You know, I'm just going to take my group and, you know, we're going to go up here. And, you know, these people are spread out. They didn't have the internet. They weren't able to communicate back and forth as well as we are. So, you know, these families are spread out all over there, and probably a lot of them are not involved in this just from pure lack of interest. You know, there's no Romans beating on our doors. They're not coming out here trying to take us over. We ain't really got to have a king right now, because all of the fighting that's going on right now is going on in, you know, inside our own territory with our own people. So, you know, this is one of those, the less people that you kill, the better off you're going to be, because what's going to be left is that.
Just thought about this when you said that. The Philistines wait until David becomes king. Even they should have fought them all.
Right, should have got them all right there. Should have got them all right there.
I mean, obviously this is in under God's control and everything with it. But and when you said that, it just occurred to me. I was reading last night. It was like, yeah, they did wait. Why do we wait?
Yeah, Eric. Yeah, if you take the top five things you know about David, nothing we've mentioned tonight hits that list. Zero. You don't get that in the list. So, you know, Eric is right. These people were warned. You know, when you get there, you're going to have, they're going to take your children, they're going to take your flocks, they're going to take your animals, they're going to tax you, they're going to do all of these things here. Yeah, wives. Yeah, you're. That's right. We're going to accumulate some wives, and you know the king is going to be a what I would call a non-functioning or a non-assisting person. You know, I kind of think of this like the queen in England. You know, what does she do? She doesn't provide any benefit at all to those people other than just, you know, a figurehead. She doesn't go out to war or anything like that, but she takes a whole lot off of the off the people of Great Britain. So anyway, they have been warned. They know exactly what is coming, and so it may be that David is just sliding along here, letting this all happen, knowing that God's going to clear all this out. It's going to all be cleared out at some point in time, Robert.
All of the turmoil and intrigue that we have seen since he said that David is going to be king, if you look at it real closely, it's the people that are in power on both sides that are causing this ruckus to try to keep their positions. Remember, one time Saul was very happy with David. just then, or a little bit later, after Abner came to David to try to make peace, Joab got upset because he said, you can't trust that guy. He's just your spy.
It's not going to turn out good for Abner, is it?
No.
We're not quite there yet. Yes, sir. Oh, I'm sorry. You know, I was sitting there and I thought that was Ryan's hand. I really did. And that's the reason I said yes, sir. But go right ahead, Elizabeth. Yeah, it was kind of right out the side of his head. And I said, yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's it. Okay, so I'm sorry. Go ahead. That's true. That's true. There's a lot of comparisons that we'll find with Jesus and David, and you know the genealogy that gets you back to him. So, yeah, I think that's right. Okay, so we get to the point here in verse 6 of chapter 3. It says, while the war was going between the house of Saul and David, Abner was making himself strong in the house of David. What happens in the next verse? He gets some of that king thing. You know, when the king conquers somebody, you know, we go and get the concubines. And so, that's exactly right. That's exactly. This is Harry taking over from William, and is what it really amounts to. And, you know, he's coming in to change. But now Saul had a concubine. Now, Saul's been dead here for a while, you understand, whose name was Rizpah, the daughter of Ai. Ishbosheth said to Abner, why have you gone into my father's concubine? I mean, this is like you're on the wrong territory here now. So Abner's political support from a descendant of Saul has now passed. It's gone. And what does he have left to do? Make peace with David. Verse 9, God do so to Abner and more also, this is Abner talking, if I do not accomplish for David what the Lord has sworn to him, that is, to transfer the kingdom from the house of Saul and set up the throne of David over Israel and over Judah from Dan to Beersheba. And that's the description that everybody has of Israel. It is from Beersheba on the south to Dan on the north. And so here, God's goal here in setting David up for the for being this great king that he is, has David's not even in this. He's not in the decision because Abner is the one that says, okay, I'm going to convert all of Israel over to you, and you know the divided kingdom is gone. Ishbosheth is gone, and it even says down here, Ishbosheth, he knew what was going on because he said he could not answer Abner a word because he feared him. Abner has built himself up and he's trying to take over, and it didn't work out. Ishbosheth called him and he says, well, fine, I'll go over here to... And so Abner is about to turn this over to him. I don't understand what happens in verse 14. Maybe someone can enlighten me. Then David sent messengers to Ishbosheth, Saul's son, saying, give me my wife, Michelle, for whom I prayed the bridal price of 100 foreskins of the Philistines. Why didn't he send Abner that message?
She's the king of that family.
Okay, so I'm gonna go back to my other example. Patton and Rommel are out here. Do you think, you know, Patton would send and say, Rommel, why don't you give me some tanks or something like this? It doesn't really make a lot of sense to me, but that's obviously what happened. But it is exactly what Carol said. David is going in this in the right manner. And, you know, he's the guy. You know, he is the heir apparent, and it's not going to really matter. He trusts God, and that's what, if you get nothing else out of these 45 minutes, get out of this, that God is in charge. David understood that, and that's the reason that he is referred to as that person that was after God's own heart. Josh, I'm sorry.
My understanding of this, and this is my thought process, why this occurring, I mean, it's more or less conceding to the fact that he was lost. You know, your main guy's gone. Left you. You know, this is basically giving them an opportunity to conceding and kind of saving face. I mean, this is just a symbolic nature of,
yeah,
you know, you've lost, you know, right back.
She's coming anyway, isn't she? Yeah, she's coming anyway.
You're
so
the right
it's
thing.
Yeah. It's not gonna matter. It's really not gonna matter. We're going to, after the invitation, we're gonna sing number 845. 845. Robert's come back to ring the bell right now. Appreciate your participation.